Hello and welcome to the Slowey Institute Australia-Papua New Guinea Network event. My name is Jonathan Pryke, Director of the Pacific Islands Program here at the Slowey Institute. It's a pleasure to be hosting you all online this morning. The Australia-Papua New Guinea Network is all about people-to-people connections, and our goal today is to keep you connected, even if the travel restrictions mean we can't get together in person. We're here today to talk about how COVID-19 is affecting the business community and beyond in Australia's nearest neighbour, Papua New Guinea. Let me begin this event by acknowledging the traditional custodians on whose land I'm currently sitting, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. I would also like to thank our sponsors who make these events possible, Bank South Pacific and Coca-Cola Amatil. Let me also thank the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade for its ongoing support for the Australia-Papua New Guinea Network. COVID-19 has been the great disruptor of our time, leaving very few parts of regular life untouched. The 6 or 7 flights a day between Australia and Papua New Guinea have dropped to just 1 if we're lucky. Businesses reliant on expatriate workforces are quickly pivoting. Supply and logistics chains are quickly being stretched. The impact of reduced economic activity and declining demand for commodities critical to both the Australia and Papua New Guinea economy have put governments under considerable strain. Today we are here to unpack all of this, and have brought together 3 people with great perspectives on the PNG Australia business relationship to help to do it. I'll now introduce each of them in turn. Peter Itse is one of PNG's most recognised business leaders. He is Group CEO of Credit Corporation Limited, is heavily involved in community organisations, including Transparency International Papua New Guinea, the Badili Club, and Leadership PNG. In October, he was appointed Chair of Kumul Consolidated Holdings, and he's also Chair of PNG FM. Welcome, Peter.
Good morning, Jonathan, and good morning to our listeners.
Next, we have Priscilla Kevin, who is an entrepreneur and IT guru who's been working in technology in PNG for 15 years. She founded PNG Women in STEM and has been a big part of the Digital ICD Clusters organization. And just last month, she was appointed to the board of Bank South Pacific. Welcome, Priscilla. Finally, we have Peter Botten. Peter was managing director of Oil Search from 1994 to 2020. Leading one of the most storied careers in PNG business. Peter remains chairman of the Hela Provincial Health Authority and a non-executive director of AGL Energy, and has 3 decades experience in a key role in PNG Australia business relationship. Welcome, Peter Botten.
Yeah, thanks very much, and great to be with you all.
So without further ado, let's jump straight on in. I'd first like to hear from our Papua New Guinean panelists, Peter Itse and Priscilla. How is sentiment among the PNG community, and more specifically the business community, going in the age of COVID? Peter Itse, perhaps we could start with you.
I think it'd be right to say, as with other parts of the world, there's a significant level of anxiety and uncertainty within our communities. And that really has probably been the major concern amongst the various parts of our community, both the rural and the urban centres. It's this uncertainty and the uneasiness around the impact of COVID, which I think has probably caused our people the most concern. On top of that, obviously the restrictions that have been introduced to deal with the threat of COVID has also impacted on people's freedom and movement. So that's a tangible impact in terms of the arrival of COVID.
Thanks, Peter. And Priscilla, how about you? How are things looking from your perspective?
I'll probably speak on small businesses, micro SMEs that have been really impacted by the COVID-19. A lot of businesses have been closed due to the state of emergency controls and the lockdowns. So it's affected a lot of small businesses, especially a lot of small businesses also run projects and contracts with the larger corporations, and if these businesses are scaling down, they tend to affect the small business down the chain. So we've seen a lot of impact also for ICT businesses, where we've seen some of their projects come to a hold, and they have to look for alternatives to actually sustain themselves during the crisis. So I think for small businesses, it's been a really, really big impact for them. The challenge we also have is really looking at the data that we have, what's actually happening on the ground. We don't have enough data to assess the situation. So post-COVID, hopefully that we can look at some of this data and plan better.
Yes, COVID certainly does provide us all an opportunity to stock take on what's important and where investment priorities need to be allocated. Peter Botten, lockdown in the capital of the Independent Republic of Western Australia. How does it look from where you're sitting?
Well, look, it is very different. I think this is the longest time since I've, in 30-odd years, that I've actually stayed home and not been in PNG. So it's a pretty good place to be if you're in the independent state of Western Australia. But obviously, a lot of challenges going on between Australia and PNG in running major businesses, major projects, supply chain, people, moving people in and out, managing your rotational staff, managing the operations and supplying the operations. So it has been, combined with COVID, combined with changes in resource pricing, probably one of the most challenging 3 months that I've seen since I started work. So a really, really very dynamic time, but some positives in identifying new ways of working, some very dedicated people who are willing to stretch their time in country, to work in new ways to keep our businesses running, but also all the challenges of infrastructure, of keeping power on, of keeping people supplied with food. So, a very dynamic time and one which I think, broadly speaking, from various sources, from industry to government to others, actually, for one reason or another, we've all muddled through to where we are today.
The lockdown in particular of travel between Australia and Papua New Guinea seems to have been particularly disruptive. Peter, I'd see how has this lockdown affected, you know, both internationally, but also within Papua New Guinea? How has that affected business activity?
Oh, Jonathan, it's had a major effect. If you look at it in terms of the international restrictions, we're very dependent because of our resource sector of mobilising and moving people across the borders. So that's had a major impact. Also, many of the companies here, they have a fairly a reasonable size expatriate workforce. And so they, you know, their movements have been affected as well. I think in terms of the domestic market, though, that's also been, there's been a significant impact on that. If you remember, the SOE, as it was introduced, the state of emergency, caused us to lock down our provinces. So as a result, the movement of produce, of items across provinces was limited, as well as people as well. That was restricted. So, you know, the fundamental, business model for us is, in terms of trade, is people movement. And so as a result, it caused a significant impact in terms of the ability of businesses to remain, to continue to trade and operate. So I think that those are the sort of major sort of impacts. Of most significant in terms of Port Moresby is the impact on the hotel trade. We've seen two major chains shut down two large hotels here as a result of the limited number of international arrivals coming into Port Moresby. So those are probably the biggest visible signs of the impact on the business activity within Port Moresby.
Of course, the population of PNG is very dispersed, and air travel between provinces is often critical when there are such limited road networks in many parts of the country. So it's certainly disruptive on a number of levels, from economic to social. Peter Botten, a lot of economic activity in Papua New Guinea, as mentioned, happens in some pretty far-flung remote places, particularly up in the highlands where you have a lot of experience operating through your time at Oil Search. The complexity of logistics to keep these operations going are pretty astounding. How do you see them holding up through this? How is Oil Search and other operators pivoting in times of stretched supply chains? How long do you think these operations can continue with a diminished foreign workforce and other restrictions?
Well, look, I mean, the planning process is to keep our people safe, firstly, non-infected, and the dynamic of moving people, not just between countries, but also around the country, are very, very challenging. The workforce has had to adapt substantially, and they need to be congratulated for being flexible enough to, as I say, go to revised work schedules, go to revised periods of time on break and having breaks in country rather than necessarily to their point of origin overseas, but also our national staff who've been impacted by the processes of lockdowns and travel between different parts of the country. We've had a very substantial process of understanding what can and can't be done, working closely with government and the SOE managers, if you like. At the moment, we're obviously stretching our friendship with our staff and their friendships with their loved ones when they can't get home. Obviously, we hope and indeed anticipate that the restrictions will be progressively lifted and people will be able to move much more freely later this year. We're reasonably comfortable that the plans and processes we have in place now in terms of supply, in terms of managing our people, are robust. But clearly, the longer this goes on, the more stressed people become, the more difficult it is to be away from home, and the more difficult it is to supply and keep our operations going. But across both, I think, the mining and the petroleum sector, it's demonstrated some creative thinking, but most importantly, it's kept our people safe and non-infected and not infecting the communities in which we work. So I think we're okay for a while longer, but the longer it goes on, certainly into the second half of the year, it will become much, much more difficult and more challenging to support.
Well, that's a very comforting message, I think, for our audience to hear. And, you know, full credit to businesses for being able to pivot so quickly to keep operations, you know, running as reasonably as they can be in times of, you know, significant disruption. And I guess a further credit is certainly due to the people of Papua New Guinea, who are famous for their resilience and used to adjusting to hardship. Priscilla, I'd like to turn to you and ask, what kind of entrepreneurial workarounds are you seeing to keep connections going during the shutdown?
It's interesting ideas, but because the support systems in PNG are not as supportive of the startup ecosystem, they have to choose between surviving through the COVID-19 crisis, as well as trying to be innovative at the same time. And that in itself, it incurs costs, it incurs time. So a lot of our entrepreneurs are left to either create the innovation and solve the problem, or they're left to go through and be in the survival mode. And that's what we've experienced with a lot of our small businesses. But in the ICT space, as you know, everything's digital. We use tech tools. But one of the things that we also have a very big challenge in is the cost of internet and the accessibility across the nations and across the nation and across the capitals. Which is not very easy for a lot of our entrepreneurs to access at the moment. But that's changing, I think, with the post-COVID-19 experience. I'm sure there'll be some important dialogue happening in raising the awareness of the importance of internet and making sure that third service is made available to most businesses.
Mm. Yes, the internet has been a subject of frontline front page stories here in Australia in recent days, with discussion on the Coral Sea cable that Australia has provided to both Papua New Guinea and Solomon Islands, and the potential it has to deliver more bandwidth to Papua New Guinea, but the challenges in actually transferring the benefits of that cable onto the consumer and not being caught up in the middle between the service providers using it as an opportunity to generate more profits. It's a big challenge, and I'm sure something we're going to be teasing out or learning much more from in the coming weeks, and hopefully it can all get resolved in order to pass on those benefits to the consumers that desperately need. See that, you know, in today's world, we see internet much more as a public utility than an essential just a luxury. Peter, I'd say, how about you? How are you seeing entrepreneurial workarounds or people adjusting in this time up in Port Moresby?
Look, it's interesting. For those familiar with Port Moresby, you'll note we operate a public transport system called the PMVs, public motor vehicles. And these are 25-seater buses that generally operate around our province, our various provinces, along with some 15-seater buses. In normal conditions, what is normally a license 25 to carry 25 passengers generally has about 40 in it. So under the COVID conditions, these operators now have restricted themselves to 15 passengers in a 25-seater bus, and I think it's 8 in a 15-seater bus. So there is probably an example of you know the change that's, that COVID has brought on. We now have you know these types of limitations on these PMVs, which have become, as I said, a little bit of a cultural sort of image of transport around our country, where we have people hanging out of buses. So that's been a bit of a change there.
Mm. And I mean, that's particularly impressive considering it's such a decentralized network, these PMV systems. You're all privately owned and operated. So these people are sacrificing income to put those restrictions in place. And I'm sure that income is not being supplemented elsewhere. So, you know, full credit to the PMV operators for taking the COVID threat seriously. Now we are getting some questions coming through on both Facebook and Zoom, so I encourage you to keep it up. I'm going to keep dominating the conversation for a little bit longer, though, I'm afraid. And yeah, I did want to touch on the role of small business a bit more and the informal sector in PNG. I mean, we all know the informal economy is a huge component of the PNG economic landscape, and its role has been brought into stark view during this crisis. Pete, I see you do a lot of work mentoring young entrepreneurs. Is what's happening in the business environment helping or hindering that entrepreneurial spirit during this time of COVID crisis?
Look, I think initially the restrictions and perhaps the uncertainty in terms of the economic climate has caused people to sort of take a bit of a deep breath and consider what options are available to them. So, in a way, that uncertainty is causing some initial restraints for them. However, from what I've seen in a number of people, young entrepreneurs coming through, is just some innovative thinking. We've had a number of them that have set up some door-to-door delivery for fresh produce particularly. And so that's an innovation. And there's been a number that have really taken on the delivery of, say, takeaway food from a number of the outlets that we've got here as well. So that's also some entrepreneurial thinking. So these are some of the signs that are coming through. And, as we become a little more, used to the new norm that will come as a result of COVID, I'm sure other innovations will come through in terms of how we are able to operate in this type of environment.
There's also the risk during this time that more people from the formal sector are going to slip into the informal economy again. You know, Dame Meg Taylor did an event last week with Kevin Rudd, where she was talking about everyone in her part of Papua New Guinea are just going back to the village, back to the garden, growing their gardens again. That traditional welfare system of Papua New Guinea is a key component of its resilience. Do you see that playing out from your perspective as well, the falling back on that traditional welfare system?
Oh, look, I think it's always there. And I think definitely in this time, I know a number of the people who have been laid off from work are falling back onto that, our WANtalk system or our traditional sort of links to be able to survive. Because of the broad impact of COVID, this becomes stretched, because where perhaps one or two people, perhaps 10 people could carry a community, now because of the loss of jobs in some areas, that's now gone down to perhaps two or three people carrying that family. So this is really where those traditional social structures will be tested.
Mm. And also for the communities in Port Moresby that I guess can't return to the village because of the domestic lockdowns. Back to you, Priscilla. We did just mention the internet before. You're saying that it's becoming a more and more important part of successful small business and entrepreneur activity in Papua New Guinea. How important do you see it? And what do you think can help in the future improve internet connectivity in Papua New Guinea?
So the Coral Sea project, the Coral Sea Cable project, has landed in PNG. What we're actually lacking is really looking at the strategy for the domestic reach, the broadband reach to the last mile, which is something that the government and partners are able to start looking at how best that they can bring that service all the way to the last mile, which is right down to the rural setting. We've got Digicel that's already reached most of our mobile, and they're trying to bring other services there as well. But there's opportunity also to partner with local ISPs that are actually located in those provinces that can extend that CRLC network right down to the last mile, which is really like accessing your internet straight from the Kunai house, as they say. And it's something that's very, very important, because now that we've seen opportunities for e-commerce, we're seeing banks going more digital. Then there's the agenda of the digital financial inclusion, which is to make sure that we get a lot of the unbanked banked as well. And that'll only happen through a really, really good infrastructure such as the internet. And it needs all these other policies and other governance processes to be in place to ensure that service is very, very effective and that the people of the population actually benefit from it.
Thanks, Priscilla. I mean, I'm sure if internet quality here in Australia over the last 2 months was the likes of what most people in Papua New Guinea deal with, you'd have a far more frustrated populace here in Australia. I want to pivot just a little bit here and talk about the impact that corona is having on the health system. As Papua New Guinea Prime Minister James Marape has already flagged that investment in the Papua New Guinea health system over a number of years has been inadequate, and that inadequacy has been laid bare during COVID crisis. Peter Botten, you've been involved in health through your role in Hela province as a director, as the chair of the board of the provincial health authority there. What do you think about the health response, and how will COVID-19 fit in with other competing priorities in health delivery in Papua New Guinea?
I suppose through the All Search Foundation, we support now three provincial health authorities. I'm chair of Hela, Stephanie Copus-Campbell is chair of Southern Highlands, Gary Opie is chair of Gulf Provincial Health Authority. And each of those authorities have different levels of maturity and different levels of efficiency. They total about 1 million people supported through those various health authorities. I think you can honestly say that the system and health supply, health delivery in the country, and certainly in rural, remote areas, is very challenging. And even before COVID, was challenging. It's challenging to get doctors, challenging to get the right medical services into many of the regions, and challenging in terms of funding. And this year, certainly in Hela, the funding levels to keep normal provincial health authority activities running is well below budget to date. And on top of that, funding for COVID activities is also very, very patchy. Naturally, in communities in Papua New Guinea, social distancing and the education about managing COVID is a very big challenge for our own people in the various PHAs. It's challenging to train up our own people to manage COVID cases should they occur. Training in how to actually react to a COVID case is ongoing and is a clear priority right across the areas that we work. Provision of PPE has been a significant issue in the remote areas and continues to be challenging, but it has improved over the last 4 weeks or so. Managing our own people who are quite scared of COVID and quite concerned about their own health and managing some militancy within staff around that has also been on the cards. I should say that it's the internet in Papua New Guinea may not be super flash, but we can do Zoom meetings with Tari and have done training through Zoom using the WHO training, NDOH training facilities, and been training our people in Tari using Zoom. So we are getting on and using a range of methods to get our understanding and management plan on COVID there right across the PHAs. But I stress funding remains a challenge and is patchy. setting up isolation areas, setting up the education processes to educate communities is a real challenge. And I think it's being helped by Australia and other countries in terms of supplying materials, getting out this out into the country, getting those messages into a village in Corriba or wherever tribal fighting, social pressures are ongoing, it is a real challenge. And I sincerely pray we don't get serious outbreaks, because it will be challenging, undoubtedly, for the whole medical sector to manage.
Well, thank you, Pete. I mean, as you say, the health system is already under so much strain from all of these challenges that here in Australia, we at a distant memory, you know, the malaria, tuberculosis, all these other health challenges. I guess it puts COVID into more of a better into a different context than it does here, that, and the response needed to allocate to COVID as opposed to all these existing health challenges that, you know, are equally stark in terms of the health impacts they can have on a community. So it's particularly challenging in PNG, and yeah, I think we're all behind you and hoping that there aren't any outbreaks in the future. Priscilla, how over to you. I mean, how can technology help to improve health service delivery in Papua New Guinea? Have you seen anything interesting going on in that area, particularly this year?
It's really interesting. From experience, we've seen that a lot of things are done in silos. There's so many people doing bits of solutions here and there, trying to address the health issue. There was an issue that came up where they couldn't track the drug supplies across all the rural health centers. And these are, you know, ongoing existing challenges that the nation face all the time. And with the crisis now on shore, it was quite a very difficult time to, you know, get the statistics on where people were and the sort of services, the health services that needed to be delivered to those places. So I think for PNG, there's a lot more work to be done, especially in the health systems. We need to make sure that there is a direction, a clear direction and a mapping set out for the health systems that we have currently in country. And the use of technology. Now we know that we've got mobile technology. We don't need to have, you know, invest in so much IT infrastructure to actually deliver those services. We can use mobile technology to actually deliver health systems to those rural places that need it the most. And it's not only just the rural. We've seen that in the major cities, in the major capital cities, we've seen that they've also had the challenge of keeping track of where things were and how to actually serve the people in terms of their health needs during the crisis.
That's all very interesting, Priscilla. Thank you. Peter, I'd see in your role with Transparency International, you've flagged the need for the PNG government to be open and accountable in how it spends money around responding to COVID-19. What are your concerns, and why do you think transparency is so important?
Look, Jonathan, there's probably two areas of concern here. And one obviously is the health risk and health impact on our communities, and the need for us to make sure that whatever funds are released to combat COVID are done so in an effective and an accountable manner, just so that the public can be assured that they're going to where it'll have the biggest impact. Our concern through Transparency International is about the transparency, but also the level of accountability around some of the release of these funds. Our issue is that the public needs to ensure that it has visibility and can have confidence around how government manages these funds as it's deployed in the various initiatives that government has within its response to COVID. What we've asked for here is to essentially have government regularly report back to the public in terms of how much money is being released, how it's being used, and the current status of that funding. And so that's all we've asked for here, is to put that on a public platform so that people can have real-time visibility of the kind of resources that have been applied to combat COVID. Unfortunately, what we found is that there are multiple streams of money being released. And as a result, it's very difficult for the public to really track how much has been released and what level of funding has actually gone down to the provinces and to the health practitioners that need it the most. So that's the area of concern for TI.
Well, I think request for transparency from the taxpayers of Papua New Guinea is a completely reasonable request, and I wish you luck in advocating for it. Now, I'm going to turn to some questions from our audience. The first is from Lisa Tepu, and she asks, similar to the Australia-New Zealand bubble, is there an opportunity for Papua New Guinea to negotiate a similar travel bubble with other countries? And I'm sure this has been a topic of conversation within your communities. And she asks, what risks would PNG need to be wary of for such arrangements to take effect? I might first go to Peter Botten and then ask Peter Itse to follow in.
There is a definite need to progressively open up travel, open up the economies, to be able to interrelate in a more robust way, in a more normal way. Clearly, PNG needs to be aware, and whoever PNG is interacting with needs to be assured that COVID is under control. Testing regimes and where events happen, the follow-up for tracking people are carried out. And I think the maturity of those systems in terms of both testing, understanding the prevalence of the virus and the tracking of people that might catch it are critical in opening up in any regional sense. Though you can see across the Pacific a range of opportunity where COVID has been well controlled in many ways. And you can see in Australia and New Zealand that the virus right now is under control. So I suppose there is an opportunity down the track to open up the economy in this region, open up travel a little more in this region. But clearly you've got to demonstrate to a lot of people that the systems and processes to understand where the virus is and track people who have the virus are going to be critical to that happening and critical to all of us not giving up the benefits of that we've seen in managing the virus versus economic benefits for PNG. Hopefully, with such an apparent low level of infection, could be part of that hopefully the second half this year.
Peter Itse, is this something that's been talked about a lot in the business community in Port Moresby?
Yes, it has, Jonathan. PNG and most of our Pacific countries have been relatively fortunate not to have large numbers of COVID cases. So we've got to be thankful there. And I must say the PNG government took fairly early steps to close down our international borders. So one may assume that helped us in terms of that in minimising the numbers. To open up the international borders, I think we'll need a significant level of cooperation between the different countries, because you need to then put in place some regimes that all countries can have confidence in order for them to ensure the safety of their communities as people start to travel again. And so really it's about understanding what levels of freedom and what levels of movement can be allowed under these new conditions. The difficulty for us is that, you know, we've tested 2,900 cases, and so we haven't had broad testing in our country. So I think that's an issue that needs to be addressed in order for us to get to a point of confidence that we can comfortably say, look, you know, that there's a, you know, the confirmed cases we've reported are an indication of a lack of presence of COVID in the broad community. So there's a bit more work on our side to do, I believe.
Thank you, Peter. A travel bubble with the Pacific is something I think we all endorse and hope can happen as quickly as possible. And in a piece of shameless self-promotion, I did do a podcast last week with Australian Liberal MP David Sharma, who penned an op-ed in The Australian 2 weeks ago calling for an Australia-Pacific travel bubble to be stood up as soon as possible. We got really into the weeds of that proposal and how it might be implemented and over what time frame. And you can find that podcast, COVIDcast, on the Lowy Institute website. Moving to another question from the audience, we have, do you feel that the state of emergency lockdown has given PNG national staff more of an opportunity to step into roles that were previously given to expats? That's a great question. And I might ask Priscilla to have a first crack at answering it.
That's a really interesting question. Thank you for that. We noticed that a lot of corporations depend on a lot of services offshore, especially skills offshore. So their projects are dependent on those skills. And because of the lockdown where flights weren't able to come into the country, a lot of their projects had to be parked or rescheduled again. It actually affected their project plans. So it got me thinking about the talent and the skill set currently in country. How are we working towards developing the skill sets needed for some of these very, very specialized projects that are needed in country? And it's really affected a lot of project planning for some of these larger businesses. But also, just speaking from larger businesses, we've also talked about small businesses. They're also impacted by support services that they need that are offshore as well. And a lot of these, say, for example, coders that are working offshore, because of their lockdowns in their country as well, it's affected some of the projects that's actually ongoing in country. So it's, again, a good time to really assess and review the kind of skill sets we have in country in PNG and how to develop that based on the industry and the market trends.
Either of the Peters, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
No, just I think underscoring what's been said before, there has definitely been a greater level of reliance and self-reliance on Papua New Guinean people and services within PNG. It's highlighted where those services are not available locally, but it also has been an opportunity for Papua New Guinean people and companies to step up. And generally speaking, they've done pretty well. So again, an opportunity which I think can be built on into the future.
Great. Another question from the audience. We have from John Byrne from the Lay Chamber of Commerce. He asks, the Porga issue, and for our audience, the Porga issue being that the recent announcement by the Papua New Guinea government to not renew the mining lease of Newcrest, the Barrick mining, to renew its Porga gold mine operations. The Porga issue is putting extra strain on businesses from Taree down the Highlands Highway. Does the panel have a view on how we can address the Porga issue and how we can get to back to a win-win as opposed to a lose-lose scenario with regards to Porga and renewed mining operations? So, Peter, I'd see perhaps you could maybe have a first stab.
Sure. Look, Jonathan, I mean, the government and the operator, Barrick, have unfortunately reverted to through the courts to try and get some resolution on this. I understand that a number of people that are trying to assist broker a way forward here. In terms of its importance to the economy, I mean, that can't be understated. At this time, we need as much investment money flowing in and as much operational money flowing into the country in order for us to be able to maintain the levels of economic activity that we're going to need to be able to manage ourselves out of COVID. So from a business perspective, this type of event, unfortunately, perhaps undermines a little bit of business confidence, which the government need to be aware of as they make these types of decisions. Ultimately, there's many elements here at play, and some of it is around sort of the benefits that flow back to state, the benefits that flow back to the province, and the benefits and impact that ultimately flows back to those impacted communities. So it's a fairly complex environment that the parties have to deal with.
Mm. Peter Botten, you've obviously been close to the action in a number of these big resource deals. What do you think about the current environment for resource projects, both existing and future developments? You know, there's a lot on the burner at the moment, Wafi Gopu, the three natural gas in discussion. So, what are your thoughts?
Look, I think it's a very challenging time for many projects in PNG, certainly, but also around the world. The confluence of COVID-19 together with a price war by OPEC against Russia and the US has been a horrible confluence of circumstance which has really smashed the oil and gas sector in a way to where many places around the world are not making money at all and are very unlikely to have any real ambition to invest in new projects until there is a greater certainty about the level of pricing into the future and the level of demand for our product as the world hopefully comes out of the COVID impact on world economy and world demand. So you put that in the light of various projects have been muted and are muted in Papua New Guinea. And in reality, there's also the quite right, the debate about resource benefits split between the state and developers, which I think is a healthy debate as long as it's managed properly and appropriately. So when you look at the environment as a whole for the resources sector, although gold is holding up very well, many of the commodities that impact PNG's revenue are struggling. And when you want to attract investment into PNG or into any country through the resources sector, predictability and stability becomes an important part of a discussion when people have stretched balance sheets and are wondering where to put their dollar or toya around the world. So PNG has some great potential projects. It really does need to strike the right balance between resources, owners, developers, communities, provincial governments and state with the developer. Those sorts of discussions, frankly, are best done usually face-to-face, not through Zoom. And undoubtedly, the distancing that has been necessary over the last few months has not made those delicate discussions and negotiations particularly easy. And I don't think that's necessarily going to change anytime soon. But to take a realistic view, I think there is scope to progress agreements, but there really is a necessity to have a much greater level of confidence around where pricing demand is going to go before anybody is going to invest any serious money and move these projects into FEED and final investment decision. And that really does mean time and delay.
Yeah, so that they haven't missed the window, but the window may be narrowing. It's you're right, the confluence of events has certainly not been in PNG or indeed the world's favour this year. We've got a number of questions here about the PNG government's COVID economic measures and responding to, you know, both the health system, but also providing stimulus into the domestic economy to help bear this storm. Do these economic measures from the PNG government go far enough? Are they helping down to the grassroots levels? So maybe start with you, Peter Itzi, and then ask Priscilla to jump in.
Yeah, sure, Jonathan. Look, in terms of the business I'm involved in, we're seeing some of the impact of the restrictions on the economy, and that's translated in the form of contractors and businesses around our country who are really now feeling the financial stress that comes as a result of these COVID restrictions. And so, from their point of view, I think what we need to try and do is to in some way stimulate the economy through either some major, some strategic investment in provinces. I think the challenge for government is how they deliver that and how quickly they can deliver that. I know the government has gone out to the domestic market to raise funds. Unfortunately, my understanding is these funds have gone back in to meet recurrent expenditure within the government itself. So That unfortunately doesn't help in the short or long term. So there's some discussions from the business council that the business council is having with government to perhaps better identify some strategic areas of the economy that the government can be able to perhaps provide some stimulus into. And part of that is an area that Priscilla is probably interested in, which is the medium to small enterprise area, and how we can mobilise funding to go to support that part of our economy. The other is about trying to perhaps provide an environment for our business community to be able to continue to operate. So perhaps working with the tax office to perhaps look at easing up some of the payment cycles there, so that you know the business's cash flow can be sustained, and as a result, they're able to continue to employ people through a longer period as we start to stabilise the economy, and hopefully be in a better position to ramp up after the restrictions have been lifted. So these are some of the measures that we're talking to government about to fully consider in their response.
Well, I don't at all envy the people in Papua New Guinea Treasury at the moment as they're trying to wrestle through declining incomes, but also looking at measures to further decline their incomes while in turn trying to maintain recurrent expenditure and also inject more money into domestic stimulus. It's a really big ask and a big challenge that I wish them well in. Priscilla, how about you? What more would you like to be seeing from the PNG government?
I think when the stimulus package was announced, the public was still trying to understand, how far is that stimulus package going to go and which sectors is it going to assist? And I think the challenge really is we don't have that data, as I mentioned earlier, around our small businesses, our SMEs or MSMEs, to then assist the government in terms of their planning. So a lot of these has been just taken based on the market that's out there. But in terms of the stimulus package reaching small businesses and their employees, that in itself, a lot of small businesses have not experienced that and are still asking what, even after the COVID crisis, they're still asking is, are we still going to be getting that assistance? And I think that, again, really, really depends on having the right data, having an up-to-date data of what small business market looks like, and then making sure that the stimulus package that they're developing is actually reaching the real grassroots, reaching the real small businesses and assisting them.
Peter Botten, is there anything you'd like to add to that question?
Just to stimulate to the shortfall in funding that is for ordinary and recurrent expenditures. And certainly in the health sector, we're seeing shortfall in funding for day-to-day business. And I suppose the challenge, as you say, in Treasury is to balance and to find the money, not just to do the day-to-day stuff, but also to stimulate the economy further. And certainly from my sources, I don't see that hitting the grassroots yet.
Thank you, Peter. We have a question from Leslie Bennett. She asks, how has social distancing affected schools and other institutions in Papua New Guinea? So I'll hand over to our Papua New Guinea colleagues. Maybe Priscilla?
I think PNG is, like we mentioned earlier, is very resilient. I'll give you an example of my son's school. When it opened up on May 4th, the school was really well prepared. They had all their protocols in place. And I think PNG has really taken on instructions really well based on the lockdown and the state of emergency, and schools have really responded well as in terms of scheduling the different classes and making sure that kids are sanitizing their hands before they're getting into their classes. So the schools have really gone forward and taken initiative to really set up the environment that's safe for the students returning. And we've seen that across most of the schools in the capital cities and also in the rural settings. So for me as a parent, I feel that the response was really good in terms of the COVID-19.
And how about you, Peter?
From my interaction with a number of parents, but also just some key people at various schools, particularly the rural schools, I think the one thing is that that's become very I suppose obvious is that the hygiene aspects of it. So some of the rural schools don't have the infrastructure of the city schools. So their reliance is on making sure that the children understand the hygiene requirements. So washing hands has been introduced in the schools that I'm aware of, which is a good practice, I think, for the children as we go forward.
Mm. Peter, I did want to touch on and one particular area of industry that has been really brutally affected by this, and that's airlines. Air New Guinea, in your role of in Kumul Consolidated Holding, Air New Guinea is clearly it's a critical asset for Papua New Guinea as a local, as a public utility, really, in terms of helping get people around the country. But it also has a large international network. How is the national carrier of Papua New Guinea holding up in this time? Is it going? Is there enough effort to keep it solvent through this? And how do you expect operations to continue on the other side of this?
Yeah, look, Jonathan, Air New Guinea is a vitally important organisation for the country. It's a national flag carrier. As we found with globally, the airline industry has been the most severely affected. From a government point of view, that they're supporting Air New Guinea to try and to manage through the COVID downturn. We've been relatively successful in sort of getting some financial injection into Air New Guinea in order for it to continue to maintain its operation. The board and the management have been able to work fairly diligently to try and reduce costs where they can, and just maintenance, but to ensure they maintain obviously the safety levels that we'd expect from them. As of this last week, the domestic routes were able to be operated again. And as people that know Air New Guinea well, the domestic part of the business is really where the profit is for the airline. So it's encouraging that domestic routes are back up again. And internationally, they've been able to provide some cargo and charters for different clients as well. And so that's helped the organization to be able to generate some revenue. And globally, as with others, they've reached out to their suppliers, those that provide leases for the aircraft, to be able to get some relief there as well. So I think those initiatives and those measures are assisting Air New Guinea to be able to manage through to a point of a high degree of confidence, hopefully when the COVID situation settles down.
Oh, fantastic. I look forward to that direct Sydney to Port Moresby route opening up again sometime soon. We do have a number of people have asked a similar question, Anil Chandra and Ian Prentice. Looking at the border between West Papua and part of Indonesia and Papua New Guinea, how confident are you that the border with West Papua is secure, and how significant is that risk for any potential travel bubble that might emerge in the future between Papua New Guinea and Australia, for example? Anyone want to take a stab at that? Maybe Peter Botten, you've worked in the Highlands region close to the border a lot.
Yeah, look, obviously it's something that operators in the Highlands have been following very closely, and obviously it's got a high profile. There's no doubt that the border traditionally is crossed regularly, as is the border between Australia and PNG on the southern parts of Western Province. It is definitely a focus area for the state of emergency, military and police. It clearly remains a fluid border, and it's one that clearly has got more attention, but it's an inherently difficult border to lock down and police, but certainly it's got attention, and a lot of resources are being thrown at it to try and control how the border works, but it is a challenging border to manage given it's the fluidity of communities that go backwards and forwards, and an education process for those communities about what the impacts of COVID-19 may bring to them and how it's spread.
And just how large that border is. Peter, I see anything to add?
No, look, I think, as we all know, it's a fairly difficult area to police at any time. We've got some Defence Force soldiers that have been deployed down there with some police as well. I think they're doing their best with the resources they have in order for them to be able to manage the vastness of that border.
Thank you all. I'm going to take the prerogative as chair to take the last question before we wrap up here. And I want to end on a more positive note to take out of this difficult situation. From each of you, I'm really keen to hear what you think we've all learned and will benefit from in future business activity and in broader society coming out of this experience, in particular, how it's going to change the relationship on this front between Australia and Papua New Guinea. So Priscilla, maybe I'll start with you. What are some positive outcomes from this crisis?
I think with the COVID-19 experience, we had a lockdown for almost 2 months. I think it started in March and went through to April. There's a lot we can learn from what we've experienced as well, in terms of our human capital, in terms of the environment that we have set up, in terms of our policies, governance, and so forth. And these are things that I think for me personally is also about the data. Data is very important. It's important to collect the data, make sure that data is up to date so that it assists in any kind of, you know, disaster planning, any kind of crisis that we may encounter in future. So that's something I'd like to see come out from this COVID-19 experience is really the significance and the importance of collecting data that's very, very important for decision making.
Thanks, Priscilla. And how about you, Peter Botten?
Look, I think one of the big upsides of, if there is an upside of COVID in any sense, is that we've actually learnt to work in so many different ways, doing this sort of communication with lots of people that wasn't necessarily very common before COVID. The fact that we can work and have an effective process in various offices and operations where people are working remotely from home, the flexibility to provide greater levels of autonomy to different workers, improve their skills in working autonomously is something I think we are not going to come back to work and work in a similar way to pre-COVID. The setups of offices, the setups and use of technology, use of Zoom, etc., is a huge positive, I think, and we're going to learn a lot from our resilience and the innovation that's come from being able to manage complex, difficult issues from a remote location, whether it be a bedroom somewhere or a front lounge. We've, I think, as an industry across a range of industries, we've learned a lot and won't ever quite be the same.
And Peter, I see the final word.
Look, Jonathan, I think as with shared with Peter Botten and also Priscilla, it has changed the way that we think about our work environment and how we operate. It's really tested those in terms of our ability to continue to maintain our operations in very challenging situations where we don't have that ability to physically interact or to be able to travel and move. So that in itself, I think, is the big lesson for us, as you know, and the lessons that come out of it for our businesses going forward. I think the biggest thing for me, though, is I think it's demonstrated the fragility of the world we live in. You know, we were so dependent on each other and the interactions that we have for each other. And so when you take that away from us, you do really understand how important that is to us all. And so that, for me, I think is something that we all need to remember is that, you know, when we do get that ability to connect with each other again, we need to really treasure it and to look after it in terms of, the quality of that engagement going forward.
That's a excellent sentiment to end this conversation on, Peter. Thank you. And well, folks, while there is plenty more to discuss, we do like to finish on time here at the Lowy Institute. We hope this will be the first of a number of digital events focusing on the Australia-Papua New Guinea relationship and all of its facets. But in the meantime, keep an eye on all of the Lowy Institute's digital products, from our research to our digital magazine to the Interpreter to our podcast and event series, to see more analysis on how COVID-19 is affecting the world around us. Thank you again to all of our panelists, to my colleague Shane McLeod for putting this all together and handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you to the internet gods for keeping everyone connected. And until we see you all again, stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great rest of the week. Thank you.